Hey everyone, welcome to the Billions After Show, where we are discussing season 3, episode 12, the finale, Elmsley Count, it is entitled. We are talking the ultimate betrayal and the ultimate union we have all been waiting for. Stay tuned, it's right here.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Woo-hoo! Hey, what's up, everyone? Hi. I don't even know what to say. I'm talking weird. I'm screaming awkwardly. I think, you know, we're all on the same page. The finale. We got lots to talk about tonight. Welcome, everyone, to the after show for Billions. Guys, oh my goodness. How are we doing? What are we thinking?
It sets things up great for season 4. Yeah. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
I was just mind blown by it all. I didn't expect so much of it.
I've never yelled at the TV.
Never yelled at the TV.
But we're having a really good time together.
Yes, we are. Right? And also this episode as well, we're doing thoughts before our names because thoughts on the show are more important. So let's go through again. Mr. Frank Moran.
Yes.
And we have Brooke. Yes. And we have Kevin Undergaro. Thank you guys very much for joining today. So let's do more than just a one word initial thoughts. Let's go a little deeper into what we're thinking about what happened tonight.
Yeah, the one story ended where I thought it was, and the other story I didn't think it was going to end where it did. So,
okay.
Yeah, twists and turns.
Are you happy with how it turned out or no?
I was surprised the way it turned out.
Okay.
And as I said, I think it teased it up for season 4 to be really interesting.
Brooke?
I totally was not expecting the Chuck twist.
Mm-hmm.
With the axe part, I was like okay with. And of course, I was so excited that the two of them got together because that just sets up for an amazing next season. So.
Woo! Yes!
It's going to be crazy.
Kevin, what are you thinking?
Same as Brooke. I didn't expect the Chuck twist. I expected the axe thing. I predicted from the beginning of the series that you need to bring these two guys together because it's so exhausting to watch these two kings or queens on the chessboard, however you see it, these powerful, you know, go against each other. And now to finally see them unite, even though it wasn't a happy ending for them individually, it was, to me, a happy ending of the show because, oh my God, like Frank's saying, for season 4 to see these two guys, these two superpowers unite.
It's going to be crazy.
I completely agree with you guys. I think I'm a little speechless, too. I think
me too.
That you thought I wasn't excited. Why'd you like, guys, aren't you excited? I was just, what just happened? What am I ingesting into my brain right now? What is going on? So, yeah, season 4, I think, is going to be even better than what we've seen before. So let's just get into it. Let's start breaking it down. Let's start with the Bobby side. Bobby Axe, who's... Oh, poor Bobby. I felt bad for him this episode. But so this pitch meeting, the pitch meeting that we see at Met Stadium. Man, what did you guys think about Taylor being on the podium talking all this great stuff about Axe Cap after we just saw her meeting with Grigor? Did you guys not want to go up there and just kind of... I don't know, to shake her and be like, oh my goodness, what is to come?
Well, but I mean, looking at her perspective, sure, she's going on her own, starting Taylor Mason Cap, but she's also got to at least fulfill one aspect of Axe Corp, so she can't completely S the bed.
Yeah, so she can't, obviously she can't stand up there, but that's the awkward part.
They can't.
They, yes.
I'm sorry.
They can't,
I don't want to get you guys in trouble.
No, yes, so they can't, you know, mess up. They have to play this whole facade that everything's okay, that this meeting with Grigor didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys think of seeing Taylor there? Because I just felt such like I was anxious, I was nervous, and I was so upset with Taylor.
Well, I've never seen Taylor so eloquent, actually, and really put together and really presenting for Axe Capital. I was really surprised knowing what she was doing on the backside. So, I mean, she really played her cards very well. Elmsley.
Yeah. And that's where it comes into.
Elmsley is the title of the show. Frank, what does Elmsley mean?
It's a used in a magic trick. So it's basically where you can have up to 10 cards where you have more cards than the audience sees. So basically,
and in this case, Taylor had more cards than we saw,
as well as Jock Jeffcoat had more cards.
So you're telling me magic doesn't exist? What?
That's true.
Wait, magic isn't real? Oh my God, my mind is even more blown. Okay, I'll stop the dirt. So we have this, you know, we have this meeting, and you called out, Brooke, that the cameo of the creator of Spanx, right?
Yes. Blake, I think is her name. Sarah Blakely.
So they're trying to get, everyone loves the show, and everyone's just trying to come on. So
I thought there would be way more cameos, actually, as we walked through that whole pitch conference. I thought we'd see more cameos, but it was cool to see her.
It was good, But I thought maybe go a little longer this time, because sometimes, you know, the cameos go on for a little while, but yeah, with her was a little. So I'm glad you caught it because I was down writing. I was like, what's happening? Yeah, completely. So we realized that $6 billion, or Axe thinks that $6 billion. $6 billion are going to come to Axe Cap after that, and they throw this crazy rager to, you know, Axe is up there screaming, typical Bobby. I kind of loved him in that moment, just being so excited. Yeah, we are back. He's up there with the band, and little do we know, craziness is going to come. Now, did you guys, let's get into Taylor's betrayal. Did you guys think that she was going to be poaching all the personnel that she went for? Do you think that she went for the right guys or the wrong guys? What do you think?
Well, they picked somebody. I'm not surprised by who they went with.
Okay.
Ben Kim, ostensibly, and then but Mafie, I mean, the we've seen so far in their interactions with them, just sort of those are their two go-tos.
Their two go-tos. What do you guys, do you guys think Dollar Bill may have been called on or never?
No.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking Mafie for sure.
Yeah.
You weren't thinking Mafie?
I was not thinking
Mafie. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were buddies. They were buddies. But yeah, I guess Mafie is, I don't know. I think I thought he would immediately.
Yeah, I saw him coming a mile away. And then Kim surprised me that he didn't.
That he didn't, really?
But because it seems like the millennials were banding together, throughout the season. Although Ben Kim had that moment where he succeeded with Axe in the previous episode or the episode before that. And that's probably what made him stay.
What made him stay,
yeah.
But I love that interaction, too, when Ben comes up from the subway. What are you doing here? Like, he just gets all freaked out. The poor guy is smart. He's just flustered like, easily.
Know, guys, you know how there's always, he's playing around. I do the millennial translator, and I translate all these
great
terms.
We love the millennial translator.
Well, there was a Salvatore Tessio reference. So Sal Tessio, Frank, you'll know this, was Abe Vigoda's character in The Godfather. And he was the one that turned against Michael Corleone.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, it's revealed and is killed. Then Clemenza stayed with the family, obviously survives. But Clemenza didn't stay because he was smarter. He stayed just because he was kind of dumbly loyal. And even the father of the Godfather predicts it's Tessio's going to turn. Clemenza's not kind of not bright enough to do it. And it just makes me think that, you know, I don't know if I'm reaching, but Ben Kim's almost the Clemenza, where he's too dumb to turn, but that may save him.
Yeah.
But I do think that Mafie, I always had a feeling that things are not... I think he's... Someone's going to have to pay on that side. I know I'm getting ahead of myself. And I think... Yeah. I was talking to... So I'll do a little inside. I was talking to Sam Roberts, who's best of friends with Dan Soder, who plays Dan Mafie. And as I was driving here today, I said, you know, Dan's doing great on the show. You know, the audience loves him. He's killing it as Mafie. I said, but I'm just telling you from a writer's perspective, I think next season his head rolls. I do.
Ooh.
Anyway, but when I heard the Tessio reference, I said, ooh.
Guys, now what do you guys think about that prediction about Mafie leaving next season?
Or getting offed.
Getting offed somehow because...
Being collateral damage.
I'm kind of upset. I love Mafie. I love that goofy, crazy character. So if that prediction comes true, I think I'm going to be a little hurt in the heart.
Someone's going to pay for this, you guys.
Someone is, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who, and I don't know if I want to know right now.
I mean, everyone that comes near those two guys always pays in some way, but now them together?
Oh, my gosh.
Forced
I know.
To be reckoned with.
That union, and we will get to that in a little bit, but that union is one that you do not want to break between the three of them. Man. So we realized $3 billion went to Taylor and $500 million only went to Axe. Like, that's a crazy difference there that Taylor was able to make.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. Somebody slipped us a Cosby.
Oh, I know. I was like, oh, my
from
gosh.
Wags. What a ballsy line. Shout out to Koppelman and the writers.
Yeah. Sorry. I just was like, I heard that. I was like,
sign of the times.
Yeah. Ouch to that line. So did you guys think that Taylor was going to get that much? I thought that when they realized, you know, that she went off, I think it was just because maybe they heard. But I didn't realize it was because it was that much money. Like, that's a crazy difference, right?
Well, when Bobby stands up there in the pitch meeting and sings Taylor's praises.
Right.
And says, they're the reason that we're at where we're at right now.
Yeah.
They manage money better than anybody else.
Now, did you believe him, though? Did you believe the words coming out of Bobby's mouth during that pitch meeting?
It doesn't matter if we believed it, the people in the room did.
Oh, of course. I know, but I'm just saying, do you guys believe that, or do you think that was just all a facade?
I think that Taylor had this super algorithm that she had, you know, as another card in the deck that she used to lure all of these people in. I mean, she'd been working on this, and I'm sure she used it right away in order to get all of that money.
Mm-hmm. Very prophetic line from Axe. Just let them know that we can be trusted and that we're special.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we know they're special. He's special. He's a genius. And clearly, Taylor's special. But which of the two can be trusted?
Mm-hmm.
Taylor maybe can't be trusted anymore. And I think this is why, ultimately, I always saw the Taylor character as the one that was going to win the Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure now.
Yeah. Well, it's also that the loyalty, and I think loyalty has been something that...
Trust.
And loyalty and trust. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Why we see the betrayal now, and then we'll see the ramifications of that.
But from Taylor's point of view, they feel very kind of slighted by Bobby.
Mm-hmm. So, So we have the meeting with Axe and Taylor. I thought it was going to be a little bit more aggressive, but I mean, good on Bobby just showing right up there, putting Mephee into his place. And Bobby, you know, basically tells Taylor, what the hell? I was putting you in charge. You were doing great. And Taylor had this whole other theory about what was happening. Taylor thought that that they were going to be let go, that they did it for them, not for him, et cetera, et cetera. And there's this whole laundry list. Now, do you think that was also excuses coming from Taylor? Or do you think that was actually how Taylor was feeling?
Well, you remember when she met with the Russian, he said, why are you leaving Axe? And she said, it's the same way you leave a house that has a furnace leaking carbon monoxide.
Great line, by the way.
It was a great line. And yeah. I think that internally she really did feel like she was never going to get where she needed to get, or she wasn't getting the accolades she needed or the credit that she felt she deserved. But at the same time, she also said that it's all about money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been about money for her and not about a relationship for her. So it's twofold.
Very gray.
Yeah,
right.
It's very tough to pick a side.
Yeah, it is.
Now I feel.
Yeah.
I think Taylor seemed like she was getting, seemed like the Taylor character was getting shorted, and it seemed like I could see the rug being pulled from the way Axe was behaving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, seeing the behavior of Taylor, I'm not so sure, and I'm not so sure that there's not a comeuppance due her for doing this. I don't know. Because before she seemed socially aware, and now to say it's all about the money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, remember, Axe also ruined her relationship with the guy.
Yep.
That may have been the final
straw.
And we know that's permanent.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
And we see that's permanent because we see Oscar coming and just saying, no, I'll give you 500 mil, but that's it.
That's it.
That's it. You're not getting anything else. And that right there is like,
and
wow.
And you could see her heart drop. Yeah. Yeah.
Heart drop. And
when,
hurt so. There.
When Axe said, when Taylor said to Axe, you would have killed me first, he denied it. What do you guys think? Would he have killed Taylor first?
I don't think so. I think with the guidance that he was getting from Wendy and from everyone else kind of around him, I think that he was not going to act on kind of what he wanted to do. And that's the thing, too, is that Axe always has this inner feeling of needing to let someone go or needing to do something. And he's normally always right about it. And sometimes he just gets suppressed into kind of being a better person because the people around him, which he should be, but then it always comes back. And maybe that's going to be something that we're going to see. Maybe he needs to listen to himself a little bit more and act on it.
But Axe never gets rid of someone who's a real asset. Maybe a liability, but someone who's helping him make money, which Taylor was helping him, I think he would have kept her around. Good relationship or not, as long as she was bringing in the cash, I think that he would have stayed true to her.
So. Yeah, well, someone who's staying true to Bobby is Wendy. Now, that just annoyed me. Taylor trying to poach Wendy. Man, I think that annoyed me more with Taylor than the pitch meeting, than Taylor being up there and just completely lying. The trying to poach Wendy scenario, that destroyed me. I'm sorry. I love you, Wendy.
What about the line, Jesus Christ, no, it's me.
that was pretty cool.
See, that's just a lot of stuff that Taylor learned from Wags and just being with Bobby and Wags and wanting to be a part of that, kind of make that the duo a trio. And that's where all the fun wit comes from, I think.
But again, here's the grayness, guys.
Yeah.
It's hard to pick a side.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor says, I'm offering you a reset from your fuck-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And Wendy has had some fuck-ups by playing both sides, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Well, that was it. Did you ever think for a minute that Wendy was going to flip?
I didn't.
Did anyone?
No.
Frank?
No.
Not at all.
Her relationship with Axe is too strong for that. Even this season aside, but just everything that they've gone through in their life, they're not.
Yeah. And she's too smart of a woman. She's too smart of a woman to get played like that. Is she? I think Wendy is.
So ultimately, I think what I take from that statement is that this new triumvirate is going to win this Game of Thrones.
I always
put my money on the millennials. I think so. And now you think you're right. If you're saying she's smart, not just loyal and dumb, but actually this was done out of wisdom, then I feel sorry for the other side.
Well, at the end when we see, we'll talk about it, but when you see Bobby coming to the door, just even the fact that she called Bobby in a moment when she realized we need another powerhouse to come in here. Man, is she amazing. I know, we'll get all into those two. Right? I feel it all bottled up here. I can feel the energy, guys. And it's just, we're waiting to talk about it.
And she also resonates this same statement that Axe made to Taylor before the speech. She tells Taylor, what matters most is lasting relationships, true loyalty, and trust. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And Taylor's response is, no. Basically, you and Axe taught me it's only money.
And that money can buy that.
Right.
Obviously.
Jeez.
But I also loved how Axe didn't even flinch when Wendy called. He's like, what? You got to flip? He was that confident.
Of course.
But I love that.
Yeah.
I love that there's a real bond there.
You have to be confident with a relationship that strong, I think. I think if there's any type of wavering, it's not as strong as you think it is. You can say it's strong, but until you have that confidence, like you're saying on the phone, it's not really real. It's like when you're in a car with someone and you don't have to talk, like that, there's no awkward silence. That's how you know it's a true friendship or a true relationship.
Or eating a meal.
Or eating
a
meal.
You see someone eating a meal and they're not talking.
Oh, my God.
They're real friends.
That's what I realized. And I'm like, man, I can just sit here and not talk to you, and now you're my best friend officially. It's so weird, but I'm glad you understand.
Exactly.
Well, someone who is really mad when loyalty gets broken, Grigor. Let's chat about Grigor's proposal. What do you guys think about that? One, two, would you guys ever kill someone in order to get rid of your problem? I know it's in this situation. Well, we're talking in billions, not right now in real life. Okay, don't worry. But I'm saying in the billions, would you guys kill? Would you kill Taylor to get rid of this problem if you were in the show?
I love that whole conversation between Axe and Hall in the car, where they basically broke down every way that this could play out. Mm-hmm. And it's a final end. How do you play with somebody where, you know, saying yes or saying no can get you into a world of trouble.
Do you agree with the final decision?
Yeah, although I was hoping that Bobby would have made the one more extra step. It's like, I need to take care of this my own way. I hope you can respect that. But
yeah. And Grigor says that you have no pest control. He calls Bobby's employees basically pests, and you're not controlling them. You're letting them run freely.
He also says, you made her, and unlike Lara and other people who referred to Taylor as they, he is she. He's not having it. He's like, you made her. She's a bug. Mm-hmm. She needs to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Axe's response says, I didn't have to resort to those measures in my culture.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that's crazy Russian culture, and that's how you do things there. We don't do things that way here.
Now, do you think that he'll take that as an offense, that he was referencing that, and maybe not as an understanding, but more of as an offensive way?
Yeah.
He's offended by him.
He's offended, but here's what's really scary, is this guy, without a blinking, it's like, I'll kill her. No problem, buddy.
Yeah.
And then when rightfully Axe doesn't get in bed with him and says, nope, not going to do it. Well, okay, peace. I'm going to go work with Taylor. But guess what? If things aren't bad enough for Taylor to have those two maniacs and Wendy now against her, you're in bed with that guy who was just going to kill you two scenes previous without even thinking. Now he's your guy. Now he's going to defend her initially when they attack, and he said that. So he's going to have her back because it's to protect his money. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you don't want your money with that guy.
Well, that's the question that I had this whole time. I was like, is she trying to get Grigor's money just to, like, piss off Axe? Just to give a final, like, stab in the back? Because why get into bed with someone you know is bad and from the beginning you haven't liked it? Why make that dumb decision?
I had this weird conspiracy theory that she actually went for Greg. We saw her talk to Grigor before everything went down. And I was thinking that Grigor went ahead and said, hey, yes, I'm going to give you my money. You have this amazing algorithm. I'm going to go with you. Mm-hmm. And that he was going to Axe to ask if he could kill Taylor in order to like blackmail Axe. And so they have that against Axe.
Yeah.
He was doing it for Taylor instead of against Taylor. That's what I was thinking. Maybe I'm completely off.
Do you still think that's a possibility? That maybe we'll see kind of
not
a partnership?
Because
you think it's gone?
Because Axe didn't take the bait.
Okay.
So now I think that Grigor's officially with Taylor. And of course, now that he's officially with Taylor, then, you know, it's going to be tough for Axe and Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
Against Grigor.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, you know, something to your point. He was laying down a lot of groundwork, buying up all the buildings.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a line in there. When Axe is talking to Hall, he talks about, you know, the Russians are, you know, basically Grigor and his team are employing an unmatched workflow in New York City. So we know they're taking over blocks of real estate. Mm-hmm. These guys are taking over. And again, the parallel to what's going on with the Trump administration and the Russian billionaires and dollars that are in our country, and people think that's very fishy.
Yeah.
I know you do the Trump report here, mm-hmm. So you probably can speak to that. Do you see the parallels?
I see total parallel in terms of the Russian corruption in all of New York and, of course, all over the world. And then I'm wondering if it's going to come together kind of how it has now in terms of our government and the Russian corruption.
Oh, my goodness. So now, as you just connected those dots, mm-hmm. Do you now see Grigor and Jock Jeffcoat joining forces, right?
Potentially.
Well, if
because if you think of
Trump and the Russians being right, you do the Trump report. Can you speak to this?
Yes.
And Trump's from New York. Speak to it.
Yeah. So obviously, well, I don't know if you guys know about all of this, but there are so many buckets to talk about that mm-hmm. Trump has relationships with, not only the Russians, but also with others who have had relationships with the Kremlin and real estate and corrupt money with the government. But the way I want to relate it is that if they get together, then Chuck has an incentive in a way, since he's a government, not a government agent now, but he could potentially get back into government. He has a way to potentially go after them with Axe.
Possibly. These various unions that we're predicting now. We have one already set, and the other one could be dangerous.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
I could just see Grigor and Jock getting along famously next season.
They'd have so much fun together.
Yeah, so much fun.
Golfing, bowling, just killing
ruthless.
People,
yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, my God.
Oh, gosh.
Buying off other government agents.
That could be a whole other spinoff. That could be a whole other show.
I know, right? It's called The Trump Report. What are you talking about?
Oh, my gosh. And Wendy, throughout all of this, Wendy, in the beginning of the betrayal we hear from Taylor, she was taking the high road and, you know, Axe, I need you to just calm down. Everything will be okay. Don't do anything. All of this, you know, spiritual, be like, let stuff happen, let stuff.
And also go inward. Let's look in the mirror and see the mistakes we made.
Yeah. And
Wags.
And Wags, immediately Wags is like, no. You go and slash her name around town and you do everything possible
and
to take
care of
that.
Just for the dudes, let me say, he didn't quite say that. He said, no, let's first party, get hookers blowed, then
let's do all this.
Right.
Typical Wags fashion. But then after Taylor tried to poach Wendy's like, oh, hell no, let's take Taylor down. But it was also because now her home life, Chuck is also, you know, Chuck has, you know, at that point, he was fired when that conversation was happening. So I think all around, she was just angry and she was just aggressive. And she's no more Mrs. Nice Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Nice Guy? Yeah. No more Mrs. Nice Guy. We're taking everyone down. We're come along with me. Let's do it.
One thing that I thought was interesting, this is totally an aside, was when Axe and Grigor were having dinner and he finally realizes like, oh, you were that little boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little boy and the mom story. I thought that was just really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes and visits his mom, which I thought was cool. And that's where we see Axe, again, being a little more human.
Yeah.
And I think frightened, and again, speaks to his line tonight of, you know, your in your climate, you had to do those things. I didn't have to do that to make my billions. That's what you did. You sold your mother out and then your mother got whatever happened in that situation. Your mother sold you out and then in turn, you know, you see this lady's like petrified now to be under his.
Yeah,
I know. She looked really
so scared.
Yeah. Scared and you know, sad.
It was interesting too that the carbon monoxide came up a couple of times, but Grigor said, I would have smelled it. Mm-hmm. He goes, I never believed that. You know, carbon monoxide is this odorless gas that kills you.
Yeah.
And people die all the time of carbon monoxide poisoning. because and he says, Greg is like, I don't believe it because I'd smell it. But it's interesting though, because
yeah.
I think the symbolism is, you know, Jock smelled it. Mm-hmm. Smelled the carbon monoxide.
Yeah.
Or so, he got lucky because.
Well, he did, but this is where the hubris and the arrogance is ultimately, you will see, kill them.
Yeah.
But they think that they're above.
Above anything.
Above law and yeah. also, you know, universal law.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Trump.
Yeah.
Right? Same, well, it's same thing. It's that.
Yeah.
But in a way, by our heroes or anti-heroes or however we want to relate to Axe and Chuck, to see them knocked down and humbled is a good thing. Okay? Because one of the things I always talk about, I know with the Trump report, I don't know if you get into it, is this guy pulled off this, the biggest election in the history probably of modern civilization. Mm-hmm. And he pulled it off on his own. Didn't take anyone's advice. When you pull that off,
so they say. I mean,
you think I don't think he took. I think that original way of going. I don't think there's a publicist. You don't think
the Russians helped him?
They may have, but I'm saying even his PR strategies, Brooke, the way he just has a new thing to get
he
it.
Does you know, his own thing, right?
Yeah, but all that rogue kind of behavior. But even the Russians, it's like that's rogue too. He went with that. So, but what I'm saying is when you pull off that big of an upset, right? You're untouchable. So that's why with Trump, you can't reason with him. Mm-hmm. It's very tough to anyone give him advice because he's like, dude, how are you going to advise me? I clearly know better than you because look what I pulled off. So in a way, the fact that Grieger and Jock believed that they would smell carbon monoxide.
Right.
And I like that because next season, where our two main characters now know that carbon monoxide will kill them. They've been knocked down. Mm-hmm. This is beautiful.
Yeah.
And Wendy too. So they're going to look in the mirror, regroup, and come back stronger.
Yeah. And they won't smell it, hopefully.
No, because you can't smell it.
You can't smell it. Exactly.
Narcissists.
That's what I'm saying.
Narcissists.
They won't smell it. We'll have to see what happens next season on that. And in the meantime, everyone, I know that we're all very sad that it's the end and tonight is the finale. But please keep watching and commenting on iTunes. Give us 5 stars and let us know what you guys are thinking of the show, as well as on YouTube. And we will stay in the comments, even though it is the last episode. So please give us your thoughts, predictions for next season. We are all very excited, and like you know, we are always in there chatting with you guys as well. So thank you for watching. Now let's get on over to the other side. Let's get on to Chuck Rhodes' side of things. Chuck Rhodes. Mm. And we immediately get this whole plan, and we start off with this amazing idea of how this is all going to go down and how it's going to be beautiful, and they're just chatting all about it, him and the AG, and it just completely turns around and goes to crap.
Best laid plans.
What'd you say?
The best laid plans.
Oh, I thought you were about to say something. I was letting you go. They decide that they're going to have the investigation actually be on paper, and they're going to send it, and it's actually going to go down. And what they're waiting for is this call, this amazing call that Jock will give to Rhodes. And when that call comes in, oh my gosh, we're all set. Everything's going to be smooth and gravy. Brooke, did you think that's how it was going to go after the plan was made?
I honestly thought because Chuck was trying to do the right thing because Jock has such moral turpitude that things were going to go fine and smooth, and they were going to get him for obstruction of justice, and he was finally going to prevail. It totally took me for a spin.
Are we suckers? Because I believe that same thing. I think we may be a little. Frank, what do you think?
Well, Chuck had made too many enemies, and so even though now he's trying to do the right thing, the people that he'd screwed over said, nope, we're still going to screw him over rather than try to let him do the right thing.
Yeah, and we see we only saw Chuck Rhodes Sr. once this entire episode, and he gives some good advice, I think, to his son in a sense. Basically, what are you waiting for? Go do it now. Go and kick butt now. And I think that, I wonder if that's a thing, instead of waiting for it to run its course, I wonder if that's also him putting into hyperspeed and making himself be in charge of these plans instead of letting it go out how the plan initially was, if that's what caused the demise of him. What do you think, Kev?
I couldn't agree with you more because I know the dad at this point is so flawed. And so any advice you're going to get from the dad is going to be the wrong advice. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as I heard that for the advice and how he's going to follow through, I said, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And I mean, so it could have been the dad, or obviously we see Brian and Kate in that whole meeting.
That was where I was like, okay, now I was worried. I was thinking, what is going to happen?
And then I think, am I more mad at Taylor or am I more mad at Kate now this episode? Because I was really angry at Taylor.
And I didn't know if Kate purposely, you know, helped throw him under the bus or if she just kind of got caught in the whole
yeah.
fire. See, and so she had to save herself.
And that's the thing is, in that moment, in that conversation with Brian and Kate, I think Kate genuinely was just trying to just ease it out and be like, okay, if I tell him what's going on, everything will be saved. Everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. But, or did she? Or did she or didn't she? And that's why I was so angry and that's why I was so upset. How did you feel?
Well, I think she had Chuck's best interest when she was talking with Brian. But mm-hmm. I think at the end when Chuck comes to his office and she's talking to him right outside, just like, hey, you taught me to be a political animal. That's her saying, I had to do what I had to do to save myself right now.
Her saying, I'm sorry, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah. In more words than I'm sorry.
Yep.
And didn't Uncle Kev say to you guys, this was laid out to us by Brian Koppelman when, mm-hmm. when he said, earlier episodes, Chuck said to Kate, you are just like me.
Mm-hmm. We had a whole episode about that.
Right? And I told you.
Yeah, we had a whole episode.
Said, yeah, I'm learning from you. And we see that consistently.
Yeah, and we saw Taylor learning from Bobby and all of that. And now
and
it
I
comes.
Said it will
so
come
many
back.
Parallels.
The chickens will come home to roost on that, and it did.
Oh, you are right. Uncle Kev is right.
Uncle Kev was right.
Uncle Kev, look at you.
Uncle Kev is often right. We'll admit.
And then, so not only is Kate giving this info to Brian, but little does Kate know is that Dake is sleeping on Brian's couch. So this information is also going to slide over to that. And Dake looks like he's doing like a full-on CSI FBI investigation just on his couch. He hasn't left there in a while. It's also just funny because Dake, I don't know, Dake is an interesting guy. But, did you guys see that coming? What was going to happen?
I did not expect that. Well, as soon as Kate was talking to him outside the office, you knew whatever they had intended mm-hmm. was not going to go the way that Chuck had envisioned.
Yeah.
So it was... To the extent that it went so catastrophically wrong, I wasn't prepared to.
Well, because when I saw Brian come home to Dake and he says to Dake that, hey, this is what happened, like we're all good, I thought we were in the clear, but I was a sucker, and I think a few of us were mm-hmm. thinking that we were in the clear on that when obviously that isn't what happened. And then, even more so, an interesting thing that happened was the Chuck and Jeff meeting. How we had a theory, Kev and I had a theory while watching it, that. That maybe Chuck was going to be the one to flip and that Chuck actually just wanted to keep his job because of the things he says. He just wants his job until the end of the term. And he also wants the Southern District to be the sovereign district and mm-hmm. basically like be the top and also leave me alone. Let me run my office the way I want to run it. Mm-hmm. But we had the theory that he was going to flip. And Brooke, you stood by
I was
that.
Like, no, I don't
know.
No,
think that's
so.
Not going to happen.
I'm like, he's following through, full through. Because I thought, I mean, this is the new Chuck that wants to like ensure that the moral compass of the justice system is fulfilled and get Jock out. And I knew he was going to follow through, but I just didn't know that everything was going to flip, including Epstein, which really pissed me off, too.
Yeah, the Epstein call. Now, Kev, did you think that Epstein call, did you think that was real? I don't know if my office is bugged. Because in the back of my head, I was thinking, uh-oh, wait a second. There's something that went off, but I didn't follow through with it.
Same with me. I knew there was something off, but didn't know what it was.
What it was, yeah. No. And it was this big combustion of betrayal, like we saw with Bobby. Now it's happening to Rhodes. And we've talked about Kate, how she was standing out front. But just seeing Jock in that chair with Chuck and then having that hat, the symbol of that hat there, that Chuck was going to wear in victory and just ride out on his horse and, you know, I did it finally. Oh my gosh, my heart just sank. How did you feel when you just, that door opened up and those people were there?
Yeah, Chuck got his teeth kicked out. So, but it wasn't, I mean, basically it felt like just like the other writers and producers, they pulled the Elms account on us mm-hmm. because they didn't show us all the cards for Chuck's story.
There you go.
And none of us predicted what happened, right? Am I right?
Never.
None of us did. Now let us know if you guys predicted it because our minds are still just baffled about everything that we just watched. Yeah. So if someone predicted it, let me know.
Yeah, I wonder if the writers pulled the Emsley count on Epstein and Kate too. Like maybe Kate met with Connerty and she didn't expect that Connerty was going to go to Jock. Mm-hmm. Then Jock didn't expect that he was going to go to Epstein. So Epstein had to go ahead and flip too. And so like everyone kind of had to flip at the last minute. I don't think it was one big, like they got together beforehand.
Now, how do you think Kate found out about it? Do you think that Brian had the guts to tell Kate what was going on? Or do you think Jock just kind of showed up and then Kate was kind of caught in the crossfires? What do you guys think?
I'm thinking, I hope that Jock showed up and Kate had no choice.
Okay.
So that's what I hope.
You don't think we missed part of a conversation with Brian and her?
Yeah, because I think Brian's smart enough to know you can't, if you tip Kate, then maybe Kate has a chance
to go back to Chuck.
To Chuck. So I think it's a Shanghai.
But why wasn't Kate smart enough in the other way? Why wasn't Kate smart enough to keep her mouth shut, you know?
She got scared once she saw all of the work that he had and that he said, you know what, I can subpoena you and basically take you down. So she was like, let me see what happens.
Yeah. And then to top it all off, on top of Chuck getting fired, not getting Jock, Brian is now taking his job. Oh my gosh, that was just like the extra kick in the boot, get the hell out of here.
Well, who told you?
Yeah, Uncle Kev.
By ripping him down in that public way, that was an ego mistake on Chuck's part where he was going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of see the cowboy, I think about the cowboy hat, it was interesting. He's like, this was, you know, you could see where this Texas guy was so insulted. He clearly knew that the cowboy hat was a symbol against him. He's just a joke at my expense. But one thing I enjoyed was seeing Jock do the same thing to Chuck that Chuck did to
Brian, yeah,
where he tears his ass out, he gets too personal, he gets emotional, and I was saying to you guys watching, oh no, don't do that, don't do that, Jock.
When he screamed at him.
Don't do that, because that's the same mistake that Chuck made, but now watch what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
Like, but interesting the parallels again between Jock and Grigor, because Jock is such an eye for an eye, or even more. It's like, I don't know, an eye for whatever, a body. You know what I mean? Like, seriously. So, and that's Grigor.
Yeah.
So those two are so similar in that vein, and that's why this is going to be so great next season.
Yeah, you're right. This is really like a modern day Game of Thrones. It is. It's one person getting in charge of the next, and then how am I going to take that over? And it's bam, 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 all these various magic tricks that happen. Can't believe you told me magic wasn't real. I don't know what to do still. but finally, we get the union. We get that doorbell ring. We get that man at the door, Mr. Bobby Axelrod, at the front door of Chuck Rhodes. Oh my gosh. Okay, now thoughts in one sentence on what did you feel when you saw that?
That was cool. It was not who I was expecting at the door. I thought it might have been Kate.
Bro? My thought was, yes, baby, let's do this.
Yeah, Kev.
So I was, I screamed at the TV.
You really
did. And you guys were silent, and I thought you guys were being millennials and not enjoying the fact that the big three was coming together to take down everybody.
You thought we were going to do this IRL?
Yeah, I thought you guys were more on Mace Cap side.
Yeah.
And that's, but I think it was because you guys were so stunned.
Yeah, well, we were just ganging up against you, and it was just going to be this whole back and forth.
Well, I don't know about our fans, but I am now firmly in the corner of Team Axe, Team Chuck, Team Wendy.
We have to be. That's amazing. It's the clinking of the wine. And as you see the actors, and they're talking. Obviously, there's no real lines. They told them to just chat with each other. And we see Wendy laughing a lot. I just want to know what Damian Lewis is saying during that little moment to all of them. Like, oh my gosh, do you think they're going to be shocked? Or what the heck are they talking? They're talking about lunch, whatever it was. It was just really cute, and it looked really special there. So that was the finale. Can you believe it? Oh, that was a lot, guys. Sorry, we rushed through that a little bit, but you know, if we miss some stuff, let me know. There's always a lot to talk about, so please put in the comments, and we can chat more there about it. Now let's get on to some news.
AfterBuzz TV news.
So this is really fun. So I'm not sure if you guys heard about this, but Quentin Tarantino, he has a new film. It is set to be amazing. It's set to come out next August. It's called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And in this film, Damian Lewis has just been casted to play Steve McQueen. Basically, the movie's going to be a pulp fiction-like tapestry of stories set in Los Angeles in the summer of 1969. It's going to talk about the Sharon Tate murders, and it's going to talk about a lot of other crazy stuff that happened during that time. And yeah, Damian Lewis was just casted among other very famous actors. Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie. The list just goes on and on and on. It's a star-studded cast. So we're very excited. I am, at least. I know you guys probably are.
Are you familiar with anyone here familiar with the
Sharon Tate murders?
Tate LaBianca
murders. Oh, yeah. I get terrified with, you know, Charles Manson.
So there's a lot of controversy around this movie because a lot of people, especially from the Tate family, don't want this story told because they're just tired of because it, unfortunately our country just tends to really glamorize
and exploit
the Mansons and exploit it and the Manson family
and also with Quentin on it, he always puts a different spin to it, so we don't know if it's actually going to follow history or not, or if it's going to go in a different way, like we saw with Inglourious Basterds. So we'll see. So that's something fun for you guys to check out and to look forward to, another Damian Lewis movie. Next let's get on to our fun little segment, Millennial Transformers. Translator. Do you have some stuff for us today, Kev?
I have the Millennial Translator. I also have some catches of the week.
And
catches. What do you want first?
I will have your catches. Let's do
that. All right, let's do catches of the...
All right, you swabbies, what do you got there? Oh, it's the AfterBuzz TV Catch of the Week.
That just made, that just made my whole day.
There you go. Okay, so from superfan Mike August, let's see. So, Billions writer and creator Brian Koppelman wrote a movie about poker called Rounders. Mm-hmm. Frank, you remember this movie? Okay. Malkovich was in that film as a character named Teddy KGB. It's funny that he's working them again as a Russian. And, of course, tonight we had card tricks, you know, used for the title and little, you know, little symbolism right there, a little callback. Chuck talking strategy about what Jock will do was like a hunter studying his prey. Reminded me of those classic nature show narrations. And, of course, in previous episodes, it was so much about hunting, remember? So kind of interesting. Axe versus mace. Nice symbolism of weaponry there. Right? Because you have the axe, and then you've got the mace from medieval times.
Oh!
Right? Very cool.
That's a huge catch there.
Huge catch.
Look at that.
So, also, Axe is a lion, and Taylor is a young lioness who turned against him. And Wendy even said to her that they are very young. Rhodes was turned on in the same exact way as Kate is also a hungry lioness. Mm-hmm. Kate was even referenced as a political animal. Mm. So, again, back to that hunting.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That
Yeah.
Symbolism that we've had throughout the season. It was a really nice callback with Jock sitting behind the desk with the cowboy hat that Chuck was supposed to wear when he put away Jock. And another great callback at the end of the same scene when Connery threw the get the fuck out of here back at Chuck. Because remember, Chuck had thrown that at him. Mm-hmm. Ricky Roma was referenced. That was the name of the character played by Al Pacino in Glengarry Glen Ross. I missed that one. Yeah. I didn't see that. Fitting that episode has a Sinatra song at the beginning and near the end. We talked about this before we went on air. Mm-hmm. As the leader of the Rat Pack, the whole season has been about leaders in their pack.
Oh, man.
Kind of interesting, right?
I loved hearing all the Frank this episode, too.
This was one of my millennial catches. He has it here. Mm-hmm. Wendy said, no napalm in the morning. That's a little Apocalypse Now reference, if you know that movie, which was set around the Vietnam War. Okay, there was a reference to a velociraptor. I also had this in my translator. One of the most cunning and lethal predators out there, but has nothing on the savvy fuckers of Billions. That's from Mike. But the velociraptor, you know, was made famous from Jurassic Park, really. Because I know growing up, it was all about the T-Rex, and, you know, it never was velociraptor. So another continuing hunting reference was Chuck Sr. saying to Junior, this is big game you're after. And Grigor said he is good with dealing with vermin.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the velociraptor, you know, just hunt, hunt, hunt all throughout this. Wag said, someone slipped us a Cosby, which we talked about before. I couldn't help but think about the hot Cosby joke on South Park. He is, of course, a sexual predator, the worst kind. So again, predator, prey, right? And I loved how they cleverly teased us in setting up next season with the closing song being Velvet Underground's We're Gonna Have a Real Good Time Together, which was cool. Right?
I have one more.
Go. I love that.
I just thought about talking about, we talked a lot about tigers in some past episodes.
Yes.
And at the end, Kate said, you know, I'm a political animal. The tiger's breath just got too hot.
Right.
So once again, animals, tigers,
prey. All of that is.
So anyone who's an aspiring writer know that these are the things that you put in your script and that are so subtle. That only like super geeks like us who don't have enough going on in our lives
can get the catches.
But right, you know. Okay, I'll give you some other ones. So, Axe, when he met with Taylor, said, "You know, today you settled all family business." That's another quote from Godfather, and it was essentially Michael Corleone, the lead in Godfather, saying, "You know, today we settle all family business. Meaning we're going to kill off all of our enemies and make our move." So, another callback, and ironic that Axe had a chance to kill her and didn't, but he's at least proclaiming that Taylor had killed all of them.
Yeah.
So again, which I don't think bodes well for her if she did.
Oh man, yeah, there's something. There's some darkness coming.
God, it's so
there.
Coming.
I just feel it.
There's a death zone at Everest. They mentioned that. Frank, you must be familiar with this, right?
Oh yeah, making that big expedition up Everest.
Right.
And oh yeah. Summit.
And if you even look online, you can see this. Tons of dead bodies because when they die, there's really no way to transport them down. Like you'll almost die trying to transport these bodies down. So there's a graveyard at this place in Everest where there's very little oxygen.
Man.
And where everybody just, well, only those equipped to keep climbing And she says, I'm young. Mm-hmm. Hotel says, I'm young, and I can make that climb.
But do you think that was a thing, though, of Bobby saying, now that you've made it? You think that was a way of him saying you made it, or good luck staying up
no,
here?
No, good luck. No, saying, you're in that zone.
You're just starting. You're just right. getting up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely not.
Yeah, I took it as a sense of also, is he now calling her his equal, or calling they his equal, or?
No, I think he was saying, hey, you know what? I'm much older than you. You have so much to learn.
Yeah.
You're just climbing up the summit. Mm-hmm. And good luck, because there's a death zone and you might not make it.
And those little baby lungs. Mm. I don't think gonna be able to those take the lack of lungs. Lungs aren't gonna be able to take the lack of oxygen. Okay, Charles Stewart was in historic times, he was known as the young pretender. So he was a young leader who made a lot of bold moves, ended up being exiled. But ultimately was called the young pretender. And so is that Taylor?
You know, very pretending, I don't know. Very young.
Grigor mentions Lee Iacocca. Mm-hmm. So in the 80s, Lee Iacocca was responsible for the comeback of Chrysler. And then ultimately, I think he was kind of found to be, and I'll probably get a lot of crap for this, I think he was kind of found to be a bit of a sham. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because Grigor wouldn't really know. I mean, he wouldn't mention a Steve Jobs. He wouldn't he'd mention Iacocca, you know, I think, which is kind of the low-hanging fruit and kind of someone whose mind's in the 80s. I don't know. I just always thought it was funny. And again, it's not that Iacocca has anything on a Steve Jobs or, you know, Bill Gates or the other people of our time. It's just kind of interesting that they used him. Claremancy is in Casting Bones. That's I've heard that, too. It's almost like when you roll the dice on something, but really the outcome of the dice roll is God.
Mm-hmm.
So you believe. So it's, anyway.
Yeah.
We mentioned the city of Atlantis. Mm-hmm. You guys know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
The lost city of Atlantis. So it'd be interesting, who's the city of Atlantis?
Yeah.
Is it Axe Cap or is it Mace Cap?
I'm not sure
who's going to be buried underwater.
Well, is Mace Cap, you know, was it ever really good? So it had to have maybe Axe Cap.
I don't know. Well, but even with that, it's a mystery that if it was, is it just legend? Is it just, you know, we don't really know if Atlantis was.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Interesting. There's a nice Barry White reference. Do you know the singer Barry White?
Yes, we do.
Right? So it makes you feel, you don't know.
Maybe. I don't know if I do or not.
Stephen, play some Barry White. Stephen, play some Barry White as
we
get out of here.
That young.
Nadine doesn't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, Barry White, okay. Comfortable. Mm-hmm. He's very soothing, rich voice.
Okay.
They're going to find some Barry White in the booth. I will do this as delicate as a scrimshander.
Mm.
That's like sailors would do scrimshaw. Mm-hmm. Is everyone familiar with scrimshaw? Mm. It's taking a whale's tooth and doing artwork.
Oh, I know Barry White.
Yeah,
I didn't know
Barry White.
And oh, there I got an interesting reference. Epstein is Jackie Robinson clean. Mm. Did you know what that one was? Frank, you know. So he was the first African American who was allowed to play with whites in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he was chosen was not just for his talent, it was because he was so clean cut. There were other players that were better, but they weren't as clean cut because they knew for America to embrace a black baseball player in the white league, the guy had to be perfect. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of an interesting, he's Jackie Robinson clean.
Man.
When Dad gives advice, you know, to bring the heat on, whatever, Chuck says to Chuck Sr., is that Rommel? Rommel was a general in World War II for Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on the German side, which isn't the good side. But ultimately, the father says, no, that's me. And that's where I said, oh, this is going to be bad advice. Because Rommel actually was known as the Desert Fox. He really gave the Allies a run for their money. He had like three different, you know, superpowers chasing him. And couldn't pin him down for the longest time. So he's not Rommel, obviously, you know, because he gave that advice.
Yeah.
So that's all of our catches.
That was a lot.
A lot of catches.
Yeah.